Morning. Morning. You remember earlier in the year when Eric was talking about Peter? And it took about 6 weeks, I think, to look at Peter's story, didn't it? Yeah, we're going to look at Andrew now. We're going to do it all in one morning. But don't worry, they don't know nearly as much about Andrew as we do about Peter. We know that Andrew was Peter's brother. We know that he lived at Capernaum, because that's where Jesus first came across him and Peter. But originally he came from Bethsaida, which is also in the Sea of Galilee. And the readings that we've had are all that the Bible tells us about him, apart just from one other verse in Mark's Gospel. So it won't take us long to get through, will it? We're going to look at three things about Andrew. One that we know, one that we deduce, and one that we sometimes wonder about. So what do we know? Well, if you remember from that first reading, Andrew started off as a disciple, not of Jesus, but of John the Baptist. And John the Baptist taught that the Messiah was coming and that the people needed to be adequately prepared spiritually for the Messiah. He helped people to get ready for the Messiah, to recognize him, to be able to accept him. And then Jesus came along, was baptized by John, and probably Andrew was there in the crowd and saw this baptism. And for the next day or two, Jesus was round and about in the area. Because we find out the next day, John the Baptist is standing with two of his disciples. One was Andrew. We don't know who the other one was, so some people think it might have even been the John who wrote John's Gospel. And John the Baptist pointed Jesus out to these two and said, "Look, there's the Lamb of God." And so immediately these two followed after Jesus, probably hurrying a bit to catch up with him. And Jesus turned round and he said, not who do you want, who are you looking for, but what do you want? And the very first words that came out of their mouths showed that they knew who he was, because they said, "Rabbi," which is teacher. And it made it clear that what they wanted was to learn something, to learn more about him. So they said, where are you staying? Almost as though they're saying, well, we'd like to learn more about what you can teach us. When's the convenient time to come and pay you a visit? And Jesus said, come on now, come and see. And so off they went with him straight away. You know, it says in the reading that it was about the 10th hour. So what time of day do you make that? Any advance on 10 o'clock? Sorry? Evening? About what time? Tea time. You have your tea at 4 o'clock, do you, Mike? Yeah. Yeah. Well, if we're going by the Jewish hours, which starts at 6 o'clock in the morning, yes, it would be about 4 o'clock in the evening. But funnily enough, John was probably right for all the wrong reasons. Because it seems that the John who wrote the Gospel, who was writing for people who were not Jews, were very probably using the Roman way of measuring time, which is just exactly the same as ours. So it would be 10 o'clock in the morning. Isn't it good to get one right? Yes. Did you? So it meant they had a good long day to listen to him anyway. Imagine how much Jesus could have taught Andrew and his companion in that whole day. Evidently enough to convince Andrew that he was the Messiah. And so as soon as they've finished talking to Jesus, he rushes off to find his own brother, to find Peter. And that's the thing that we really remember him for, isn't it? I've got a quote here from William Temple, who was a theologian back in, I believe, the 19th century, and what he says is, perhaps it is as great a service to the church as ever any man did. Now, you can't get much more impressive than that, can you? And that's what we remember Andrew for, the ideal evangelist, telling his own people first, telling them quickly. And we also know that he was prepared to learn. He was already seeking the truth, and then when he got an opportunity, he seized it. And do we, or are we content with just a little bit of information? Or when we find the opportunity to learn more about God, from God, do we really seize that opportunity and then move on in the light of what we've learned, just as Andrew did? And then things got a bit more difficult. Now, to fill in the whole of the story, you have to look at the other Gospels, because some give one bit and some give another bit. But if you put them all together, you find that what happened next was that Jesus disappeared for 6 weeks. Just like that. And then, to make matters worse, John the Baptist was arrested and thrown into prison by the Herod of the time. And so there's poor Andrew. He's lost his new master. He's lost his old one. He's left in the middle, wondering what on earth is going on. So what was he to think? It was a difficult period. We often get difficult periods just after we've come to know the Lord or had some new revelation from him. Just as things seem to be going well, it all falls apart. And it took 6 weeks, well, 40 days, before Jesus came back. And that is where we find the only other reference in the New Testament to Andrew, because it's that verse in Mark chapter 1 where Jesus is walking by the Sea of Galilee and he sees the brothers Peter and Andrew fishing and calls them, and they immediately get up, leave the nets and follow him. So it's not, as we sometimes think, two rash and impetuous brothers suddenly leaping out of the boat and rushing off to follow a stranger. I think in Andrew's case particularly, there was a big lot of relief when Jesus came back, called him, and at last he was able to follow up on all the things he'd been chewing over for the previous 6 weeks. He was able to leave his nets behind, follow Jesus. And he didn't go back. Maybe not even in that chapter right at the end of John, when some of the disciples go back fishing. We don't even know that Andrew was there. He followed after Jesus. So that's what we know about him. What can we deduce about him? What sort of a person was he? Well, that's where the other two bits, the short readings that we had, they come in. Look at John chapter 6 verse, where it's the very familiar story of the feeding of the 5,000. And right towards the end of the day, everybody's getting hungry, there's nothing for them to eat, and Jesus turns to his disciples and says, well, what are we going to do, basically? He knows, they don't. And Andrew's the one who's got a sort of an answer, because he's found a young lad with a little bit of food. Now, we don't know what Andrew was doing at the time. I don't know whether he was working the crowds, do you think, trying to see if there was any food available? There probably had been at the beginning of the day, because we find there were quite a number of empty baskets around at the end of the story. But by this time, when the people had been listening to Jesus all day, there was nothing left apart from this lad with his 5 loaves and his 2 little fishes. I know we know they're not the great big cottage loaves that we get these days, but just to give you an idea of the sort of insignificance of them. If you look back into the Old Testament, there was a famine in the land, and the prophet Elisha had a group of followers, round about 100 mark, and somebody came along and gave them a gift of 20 loaves, four times as many as we get in this story. And his servant's reaction was, well, how can I set these before 100 people? So what on earth did Andrew think was going to be the use of just five loaves amongst these thousands around him? And two fish. Well, we're not thinking in terms of fish as in fish and chips. We're thinking of just a little titbit, a little relish, a cherry on top of the cake, as it were. Barely a mouthful. And how did Andrew come across them? One little lad with his basket in all this crowd. I wonder whether Andrew found him, or did he find Andrew? Was it that Andrew looked sympathetic, looked approachable? Because after all, the lad must have known that what he was offering was really not of a great deal of use. Was it the way that Andrew behaved that made this boy willing to come to him and say, well, I've got this? And then Andrew took him to Jesus. He saw there were some possibilities in what the boy had got, but he hadn't got a great deal of faith, as he said to Jesus, what's this among so many? But nevertheless, he brought it to Jesus. Didn't dismiss the lad out of hand, didn't say, that's no use, go and eat itself somewhere. He took what was offered and brought it to Jesus, and only then was a miracle able to happen. A kindly man. A man who didn't turn somebody away because he thought what they had was insignificant. And then he was approachable again the final time that Jesus and his disciples went to Jerusalem, because there Jesus was preaching and teaching, and some Greeks came, Greek proselytes. They'd converted to Judaism, but they weren't proper Jews, you might say. They worshipped the God of the Jews, but they weren't allowed all the way into the temple. They could only go as far as the court of the Gentiles. They were accepted so far and no further. But they wanted to see Jesus. And I don't imagine it was just to see a celebrity so they could go back home and say, when I went to Jerusalem, I saw Jesus of Nazareth. No, they wanted to see him, to get to know him, to learn what he had to say. But there was this problem. They might have heard that Jesus had said he was sent to the Jews, to the house of Israel. So would he want to have anything to do with them, or would he say, no, I'm not for you? Or would they perhaps have been just a bit encouraged by stories they might have heard about Jairus' daughter, because Jairus wasn't a Jew, about the Syrophoenician woman who came from way over on the coast? She wasn't Jewish, but Jesus healed her child. So maybe Jesus would speak to them, maybe he wouldn't. If they approached his disciples, what sort of a reception would they get? So they approached Philip, and Philip immediately knew what to do. Good old Andrew, he'll know. So Philip took them to Andrew, and then together they went to see Jesus. And Jesus, as we know from the story, was willing to receive them. In fact, they were part of the build-up to the final scenes in Jerusalem. So there again, we've got Philip being sympathetic, being approachable, being willing to come to Jesus with something that he's not entirely sure about, but willing to hand it over to Jesus. So, in fact, if you look at Andrew at this stage, you've really got an excellent example, haven't you? He's somebody who's actively looking for spiritual truth, just as we should. Somebody eager to bring other people to Jesus and going to his own family first, just as we should. He's reliable. He's approachable. He's building on the faith that he has. He's accepting responsibility and bringing things to Jesus and then handing them over to him. Just what we ought to be. Model Christian. So shall we leave it there with an exhortation to be like Andrew, to think about modelling our behaviour on him? Or shall we think about the problem that may have occurred to you whilst you've been looking at the stories of Andrew? Have you ever wondered whether Andrew ever felt that he was just second best? He was the first to follow Jesus. He introduced Peter, but he's never included in that inner group of three, of Peter and James and John, who shared all those special experiences with Jesus. He wasn't there at the Transfiguration. And very often we get these three lumped together, but no Andrew. He was just one of the others. There's only one occasion when he's mentioned in the same sentence as these three, and then it's rather grudgingly. In Mark 13, we can read about Jesus talking about the destruction of the temple, and four of the disciples go to him privately, and it's written down Peter and James and John and Andrew. Not putting him together with his brother, as you might expect, but sort of tagged on at the end. So, did Andrew feel sort of second best, not in the same category as his brother? You go over into Acts, and there Peter and John are constantly mentioned, and Andrew isn't mentioned at all, not once by name. You assume that he's just there, just one of the rest. And even Christians haven't really appreciated him for himself, just for the fact that he brought Peter to Jesus. Think about that quote we had early on. It sounds a glowing testimonial, doesn't it? As great a service to the church as ever anybody did, to bring somebody else. Do you think he might have found it a bit hard to play second fiddle? Perhaps you might have a bit of fellow feeling for him. I think maybe we all do. Because other people can easily make us feel second best, whether it's because of our appearance or our gender or our oranges or our behaviour. Well, if it's other people, we can show them. But what if we do it to ourselves? Especially if we feel that it's God's intention somehow. After all, Romans says, don't think of yourselves more highly than you ought to think. Esteem other people more. And it's so easy, isn't it, to think of so many other people who can do things so much better than we can. They can teach better. They can evangelize better. They're a lot better at children's work. They make better bread puddings. There's always somebody who can make us feel, and it's not their fault, but make ourselves feel second best somehow. And then it goes on, doesn't it? We look at the Bible and it's full of hierarchies and people being chosen and not chosen and given 10 talents or only 5 or just 1. And historically, people have tended to accept their position, whether it's high or low. Well, we've started to cut some of those sort of verses out of our hymns now, because we're more democratic these days. Even when the disciples were squabbling amongst themselves about who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom of God, that was done in the quite unshakable assumption that there were going to be different positions and levels in the kingdom. So, you're feeling a bit sorry for Andrew, feeling a certain empathy with him. Know what he feels like, or what we think he might have felt like. And that's in spite of the fact that Andrew had a privileged position in being one of the 12. And just think, when we first met Andrew in these readings this morning, what was he doing? He was having a private conversation with Jesus. That other mention on the one occasion when he was classed with Peter and James and John, it was a private conversation. Do we think those were really the only times when Jesus spoke to him personally? The Jesus who said of Mary and Martha that Mary, who wanted to sit at his feet and listen, chose the better part? Wouldn't he extend that sort of invitation to his disciples, especially to one like Andrew, who wanted to listen, who wanted to learn? And how about us? Time spent in the presence of God, it's not possible to feel second best. To feel humbled, yes. To feel unworthy, yes, but also to feel privileged. Listening to God isn't a second-rate experience. It's not a second-rate experience to know that God listens to us and has time for us. He doesn't say to us, well, I can spare you 5 minutes and then I've got half an hour booked in with the Archbishop of Canterbury. No. He's got all the time for us. They say, don't they, that if someone really listens to us, it makes us feel special and important. It's true that when God listens to us, we do feel privileged and special. And listening to God, now let's get this the right way around. When we listen to God, it works differently. It doesn't make him feel more important, but it does make him make us aware of how important he is, of his concern for us. It clarifies his importance in our minds. And a relationship with God is more important than our view or anybody else's view of our position. Though they may very well be aware of the effects of that relationship. And there again, we come back to all the good things that we learnt about Andrew. How he was actively looking for spiritual truth, prepared to go after Jesus to find it, to spend time in his company, to get to know him more, and then to build on that information. To bring others to him, first of all his brother, and then people that he wasn't altogether sure that Jesus would be too enthusiastic about. Well, we got the wrong end of the stick there. But nevertheless, he brought them. He trusted that it was up to Jesus to make that decision as to what he was going to say and do to these others. He helped that process by being approachable. And isn't one of the gifts of the Spirit supposed to be the gifts of help? He was sensitive to the other people, knew what their needs were, knew what their situations were, took the little lad with his basket of just a mouthful, brought him to Jesus, went to Jesus on behalf of the Greeks, and got them an introduction. All good examples for us. And remember that when we're doing similar sort of things to Andrew, we're doing it not from the position of where and what we feel ourselves to be, which is never good enough, which can be second rate, but from a relationship with God, which is about his power, his ability, and about how he can help us to demonstrate his concern in love for other people. In other words, just like Andrew. So it's not taken too long to discuss Andrew, but hopefully these three things about him will be an encouragement to us. We're going to finish with a hymn in Mission Praise. I hope